I was just thinking of something to share with the devotees tonight, and I came up with two things. One was a book of Srila Prabhupada's, a little book that I found on Jamunacharya's bookshelf called Dharma and the Way of Transcendence, and it has it has been cleverly put together from Srila Prabhupada's writings, so it reads as a new book. But if you're familiar with his purports and so forth, you'll see, oh, I know where that comes from and that comes from. So it's a little bit of a literary collage. So I was looking through this and trying to find something to share with you. So I want to read you something. This is actually from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service. This is a quote. And then I would like to see if we can generate some exchange in this regard. Prabhupada writes, "The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. Complete freedom. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, personality of Godhead." And this text of Prabhupada's writing is very different than the way he was writing and speaking later, when he had an institution and he had messages, specific messages to relay to them. At this time he is in India alone, and he's writing from his own inspiration, and he has not yet taken his writings to the West. So there's something very sort of light and very poetic about how he writes. He says, "There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifest through the gross body and the mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord and any occupational duty that does not help one achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said herein to be simply a waste of time. That is because other occupational duties cannot give liberation to the soul. Even the activities of the salvationists are considered to be useless because of their failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties. The gross materialists can practically see that his material gain is limited only to time and space, either in this world or in the next. Even if he goes up to the heavens, he will not find permanent abode for his hankering soul. The hankering soul must be satisfied by the perfect scientific process of perfect devotional service." So this is actually a very classic testimony section of Srila Prabhupada's writing, because he's he's very feeling in what he is saying. It's not just a statement of fact. He's very strongly urging us to see in this way. Now, I want to ask you if anyone has any thoughts that come to their mind after hearing this that could help us to go over the subject matter and enter it a little more deeply. It's your turn. Yes.
I was struck by occupation.
Occupation.
One has to find occupation that
yes.
Will reawaken this love for Krishna.
Yes. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we think there's spiritual, like in a context we see, I go to church and God is in the church, or God is in the temple for us, at the temple in the temple, or he's somewhere in some room of my house, and then I go to work. And I don't necessarily see that these two things have a very important connection with each other. So it's funny to hear Prabhupada talk about occupation. We expect him to talk about all heavenly, spiritual, ideal things, but he's talking about occupation, very much down to earth as well. Thank you. Who else can churn up this message from Prabhupada?
Yes. In relation to the first point, I'm finding in my own occupation that there's every day and several times a day a challenge, if you like, to be God conscious or Krishna conscious or not.
Yeah.
So actually it's an amazing,
yeah.
And then I was listening, and someone was saying that everything in the universe is designed to remind us of the universe.
Yes.
And I realized kind of got it that at work I could be,
you have a choice.
I could turn off and not and leave
yeah.
that at home, or I could take
yeah.
it and do everything in it.
Yes. You're like that, aren't you? You know you have a choice. I want to read you something that's a little, just a little tiny thing from Srila Prabhupada. This is from my husband's writing when we were with Srila Prabhupada. I spoke to Prabhupada about my tapestry handbag business, which was doing quite well. I was able to send Prabhupada donations every week. Now, we were so humble and simple, doing quite well meant we made about, I think, $200 a week. It was doing quite well because we were really kind of simple. And we would send as much as we could to Srila Prabhupada every week. Still, I felt guilty that I was neither serving Prabhupada in Hong Kong nor living in the temple. I informed Prabhupada about the items I was selling, describing them in an almost derogatory tone. But Prabhupada was enthusiastic, and he called the business good. I was surprised and asked, I'm selling handbags. How is that good? Prabhupada looked at me very soberly, and he said, one has to do something. So his context in which it was good wasn't that, oh, that's fantastic, what a wonderful occupation. One has to do something. One has to do something to live. So in that context, the idea is, in that context, it's how to make Krishna the center of what you're doing. That's your challenge. The challenge isn't the work. The work may be challenging, but the challenge isn't the occupation. The challenge is how to keep your consciousness steady, understanding what you're doing is for Krishna's pleasure. It's like sometimes as devotees we get kind of like caught up in a type of duality where spiritual things are good and the material world is bad. But Srila Prabhupada would more or less say, from the spiritual point of view, everything is bad if it's not for Krishna. He would say that. At the same time, to balance that from falling into too extreme negativity, he would also point out to us that everything belongs to Krishna. And as soon as things are used in Krishna's service, then they're no longer bad. But if they're good or bad in the material sense, it's no big gain because they don't belong to you anyway. They belong actually to him. I'm going to read another quote from Prabhupada and then go back to his writing. Prabhupada's flight to Melbourne landed and he was escorted to a press conference in the airport's VIP lounge. This is in 1975 Melbourne. 100 jubilant devotees sat on the floor as reporters questioned Prabhupada, who sat with Madhavisa on a raised dais. The questions were the usual. Reporter, what is your name? Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Reporter, what do the A and the C stand for? Prabhupada, if I say, you will not understand. Reporter, please, I would like to know what the A and the C stand for. Prabhupada, you will not understand. Reporter, what do the A and C stand for? Prabhupada then said, Abhay Charanaravinda. He pronounced Abhay Charanaravinda so fast that even I could not understand his words. The reporter, I'm sorry, I didn't follow that. What did you say? Prabhupada, Abhay Charanaravinda. Prabhupada again quickly pronounced his name. The reporter, could you repeat that again? Prabhupada, I told you, you would not understand. And the comment is, Prabhupada was so clearly unimpressed by the reporter's superficial question, and he playfully outmaneuvered him as easily as an adult outmaneuvers a child. A second reporter began with a more pointed question. Reporter 2, I've heard that your disciples work all day but only get 6 hours of sleep at night. I wanted to ask you, how many hours each night do you sleep? Prabhupada, I generally go to bed at 10 o'clock and I wake up at 12 o'clock. I then do all my translation work. Madhavisa, interrupting in a protective mood. Prabhupada doesn't sleep much at all. He sleeps less, not more than his disciples. He doesn't sleep more than 4 hours at night. Prabhupada, no, not 4 hours at night. I go to sleep at 10 o'clock and I awake at 12. How many hours is that? The reporter should have recognized Prabhupada as an elderly holy man traveling around the world on a God-conscious mission. But instead, he was trying to expose that Prabhupada was a cult leader and that he exploited his followers. These unfortunate and befooled followers, he was simply trying to imply, were working hard to support the luxuriant and easy living of their cult master. Prabhupada revealed the opposite. Although his disciples were working hard, he was not exploiting them for his personal pleasure. Both he and his disciples were working hard for Krishna's pleasure. Rather than using his disciples to finance his life of ease, as the reporter was hoping to prove, he worked even harder than his disciples in the service of his Guru Maharaj and Krishna. So I'll go back to something that the reporter has written. This is the end of one of Srila Prabhupada's speeches. He said, so you have to take up the sword of Krishna consciousness and you have to cut the knot of material entanglement. The Krishna consciousness movement is spreading by teaching people how to take up this sword. I started this movement in New York in 1966. I had no actual sword like those wielded by some religious preachers. They take their scriptures in one hand and the sword in the other, and they say, you accept this scripture or I will cut off your head. No, he said, this is not the way of spreading Krishna consciousness. But still, I did have a sword. The sword of remembrance of Krishna, which I taught people to use by giving them a chance to hear about the Lord. The effect of hearing about the Lord is described in many verses. So this was a very, I found when I read this, I could just see Srila Prabhupada speaking like this. I have a sword. It's not a sword to chop off people's heads. It's a sword of giving them knowledge. And with that knowledge, they have to take up that sword. They have the responsibility. I'm giving them the sword. They should take up that sword. What was the sword? Do you remember? The sword of remembrance of Krishna. Was there something else that he said there? have taught the people to use, how to use this sword, by giving them a chance. What do you think? Guess.
To hear about the Lord.
I've given them a chance to hear about the Lord, and now I've given them a sword of being able to remember Krishna. And with this sword that they have, this sword, they can cut the knot. The knot is material entanglement. And in the last section, Srila Prabhupada was saying that the need of the spirit soul, he needs this, just like we all need air to breathe. If somehow or another there was actually absolutely no air in this room, we would all die. We need it. It's not like we like it, or sometimes it seems important to us. It's essential. We need it. So he's saying the need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere. So someone can think, I feel so restricted in my, what, in my job. I need to get a job where I have more freedom. I feel so restricted in my marriage. I need to go into a marriage where I have more freedom. I feel so restricted in my whatever, in the relationships with whatever. I need... But here he's saying that he wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. That's what's propelling us. That's what our need is. If we register that, my need is as great as that. It's not a small thing. I can shift this, adjust that, move this, place this here. I can make the room look nicer, make this, do that, on and on. But the need will remain. Because it's the need to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. And what does he want? And this doesn't mean he. I mean, Prabhupada is saying he. Is he and she. What does the soul want? They want to see the free light and the spirit. So we should understand this is what we're looking for. Wherever we're looking, we're coming up with all kinds of alternatives to the constrictions and the dualities that we experience in life. We come up with so many things. But we have this basic need. And this need can be, we can receive what we need for that need by hearing about Krishna. And this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted to give every one of us. So I was thinking as we were sitting here chanting, how the first time I came to Christchurch was in 94. I stayed at Gamila's house. And that was the first time I'd been to Christchurch. But the first devotee I ever met from Christchurch was Ramila. And at that time, your Radha was how old?
5, 4.
Something like that. A long time ago. And she was sick. And we had to go to the doctor in Vrindavan. He was visiting Vrindavan. And her daughter was
6.
This big.
Mm. She was 6.
Yeah. And now she's grown up and doing so many things. And my son is too. So on and so forth. And it happens. It just, life goes on. They were little, now they're big. Life is moving, time is moving all the time. It's never static. It's not that we come into this world as a baby, but we're all the time, getting bigger, up to a certain point, and then as Nana knows, then you get smaller, and then you get bigger, smaller, and you go on like this. And yet to us, when we get distracted or attracted to the world, it seems like what's right in front of us has such a permanence and a reality to it that we don't know what to do except be absorbed in it. But actually, when we understand what is our real need and where we will find it, we won't find it in these things, then it's as if it frees something in us to actually be ready to be taken closer and closer to what we're actually seeking and what we actually require. Does anyone have any thoughts on this? Yes.
And this analogy keeps coming to me from Prabhupada, where he talks about migratory fish, the salmon that lays its eggs in the river and then finds its way as a little fish down to the sea. But then at some point he makes the point that during the life, of course the analogy is over lifetimes, but during the life, after living a life in the sea, then that fish he has this incredible instinct. He actually finds his way back up not only our river, but the same river where he was laid as an egg, because of some sort of instinctual thing there. And he finds his way back to the exact place where, as a big fish. So the idea of leaving, Prabhupada used the analogy, the idea of leaving the spiritual world where we came from.
Mm.
We find our way into this world and live so much life like an open sea. And then this instinctual thing of wanting to get back up.
It's a place where we,
the place where we came from.
There's another way, when you said salmon, that I had thought of this afternoon. There's another analogy that uses a salmon, which is not a, that's a very simple, you know, down and up the river again. But maybe this one adds a little of the struggles of life to the salmon's existence. But I remember hearing that the salmon, he lays his eggs, I don't know, I won't get this right, you'll have to correct me, but he has to go downstream. All the baby salmon go downstream and not all of them make it. And then those who make it, then they swim upstream again and lay more eggs. And as soon as the eggs are laid, all those baby salmon have to swim downstream. And only the ones that make it swim back upstream again. So I was thinking how there's something in life that there are many obstacles. Even though if you use the example of the salmon, it goes downstream, not everybody makes it downstream. Unless they can actually surmount all of the various obstacles that come along the way. So it's funny, when you were saying that, I was thinking that one thing I wanted to say was that when we were teaching Gurukula in our younger days, a principle that I learned at the Gurukul was that if you want the school to be successful, and sometimes we had some success with our school, it's a small school, we noted a principle that the oldest students have to be very good. If the old students are good, the younger students will grow and learn. And because we had it as a practical experience, it's not a rule of thumb, this was a life experience. It's the older students on the top, like the 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds were getting into all kinds of nonsense. You're protecting the younger ones, the 5-year-olds, the 6-year-olds, the 7-year-olds as they're growing up. But when they reach around about 10 years old, they look up and they see, oh, look at that, they're not listening to the teacher. They don't do what they're told. They don't sit in class. They do this, they do this. They're disobedient. Ha! And then you see that the next generation coming up, they do the same thing. So I was thinking how Srila Prabhupada, he always wanted to encourage his oldest students. When my husband had been a devotee for probably 6 years, he asked a question in one situation, and Srila Prabhupada said, "You were one of my most senior students." I was just sitting there thinking, senior students, he's only been a devotee for this little tiny amount of time. But he was encouraging that sense of responsibility in him, that you are a senior student. So you, because you're a senior student, you have to take responsibility for the others. And of course, the age gap was so minute that no one felt like a senior student. And one neither wanted to take responsibility for the others. But this is a very, very important point if you want to actually have a successful anything. That you have to encourage and help and strengthen the older students. Because as they grow and as they carry the impressions that they have been taught, then the ones coming behind are very protected, because as they look up, they see, oh, now when I'm up there, I have to do this. When I'm up there, I have to do that. Because there's obedience as the process goes up of teaching. So it's funny, this came to me as I was just sitting here, that's why I find when I come to Christchurch, it's actually so nice to see the devotees, particularly the devotees who I met. Many of the devotees I know I met in 1994. Then in 1995, I met a few more. Practically almost, except for a few welcome new faces, I knew almost all the devotees from so long ago. So I always think of you as the oldest students here in Christchurch. Especially Ramila, she's from baby up, I've known her. So it's really, really an important thing that you, as the oldest devotees in Christchurch, work very hard to set a good example by trying to follow what Srila Prabhupada is teaching. in whatever circumstances you're in. As you were pointing out, we have to have an occupation, and Prabhupada is saying to my husband, you have to do something. You know, he wasn't making big, good or bad of it. You have to do something. So we have to do something in life. We have to take care of our family. We have to do that responsibly. We have to do so many things, and we have to set an example. And sometimes it seems that the oldest students, they sometimes feel like it's too much hard work. You know, the oldest child in a family often feels like, you know, all the burden is resting on me. You know, my mother says, can you wash the dishes? Can you do this? And the little ones don't seem to. Do you have that problem? But the reality is that weight of responsibility is being handed to the oldest students because they're about to come up into positions of greater authority than they can imagine at the present time. Because time is always moving. Time is moving. Time is moving. As the salmon goes down, if the salmon gets down there, then they have to come back up because then they have some responsibilities that they may not be aware of yet. So I say that with a bit of a laugh, because I have to sit here and have you all look like me, and I have to talk to you as if I have some knowledge and I'm kind of like the one who's supposed to set the example. So I can happily say to you that that's going to happen to you too. But you have to do that also, because this is Srila Prabhupada's mood and mission. We have to give this knowledge. He was giving it, this sort of knowledge. We have to also be prepared to do the same. In whatever way, not like there may be a specific way related to a temple and the temple's functions. But we were living at that time, it was actually funny because we were living outside and Krishna consciousness was so beginning that if you didn't live in the temple, if you lived just around the corner, the stigma was like immense, you know. You were just like absolutely you couldn't associate with a person who lived around the corner. It was something was terribly wrong with them. But they didn't live in the temple. That's how small the society was at that time. And I remember for myself, just as something that I laugh about sometimes, was in 1975 when Srila Prabhupada was speaking these words to us. We were living outside the temple. And we had been listed amongst the people who were really off the list of people that you were supposed to have anything to do with. And I remember a very old friend of mine from later, we became old friends. She lives in Los Angeles, her name is Gunavati. I remember Gunavati, it was a very mild person. And she didn't really follow, you know, any kind of a mood of retaliation of any kind. Although there was some rivalry there, some tension. So one time I saw her in the street and she was distributing books. And so I went up to her and said, you know, and she said, oh, Hari Bol, she talked to us in a normal way. And we said, would you like to come home and have some prasadam? She went, no! Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not, oh, sorry. We got home and said, oh, yeah, right. There's the wrong thing to say. And like years later, we'd like laugh about, you know. But that was where we were situated in juxtaposition at that particular time. And it was so acute that at that time, the devotees living in the temple, for their own reasons, they had put a system of an alarm on the gate of the temple. And when you wanted to go in the temple, you had to press the button. And when you press the button, a voice after a few seconds says, who is it? And then you have to identify yourself. And then if you say, so-and-so Prabhu, the door opens immediately. And if you say a name that they... It goes 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the door slowly opens. And it was like, it was so painful, but we were so immature that we were like this. And when Prabhupada came, they didn't even want us to see him. We were considered so much outsiders and so much like just not really meant to be around. We were just a disturbance to the group. And when Prabhupada saw us, when we came in to see him, he was very cordial and very respectful. And then we, it's interesting, I'll give you to the other side, we said to Prabhupada, you know, we didn't bring it up, but we said, is it all right to live outside the temple or inside? This is a big issue. Can you live outside a temple? And Prabhupada said, I will address this. in my class tonight, and he was very, he was equal. He didn't have any emotional dealings in it. We were like his children, so they're fighting. So this is interesting, because here Prabhupada would explain from his point of view about this issue. A householder, another time Prabhupada took his massage and I asked him, what is the position of devotees living outside? Prabhupada replied, I shall answer this question once and for all times in the lecture tonight. So it was really, I remember it was because we were very young and very immature, and we had a lot of, there was a lot of tension, rivalry between us. And I remember we went home and we thought, because Prabhupada was very cordial to us, we thought, ah, he's going to say, you know, we all anticipated what he was going to say, like he was going to make some statement, because he said, I will answer this question once and for all tonight. So we all came, and we all said, and of course, Srila Prabhupada is, he's going to speak philosophically. He's not going to get involved in the, you know, the different things. So as usual, Prabhupada's class that evening was attended by all the devotees, and as the devotees waited for Prabhupada to arrive, an air of expectancy electrified the atmosphere. I was especially eager to hear Prabhupada's class. Prabhupada proceeded with his class, and as I listened, I thought on several occasions that Prabhupada was obliquely answering the question. Then at the end of the lecture, Prabhupada mentioned that this was Prabhupada's view. He said, it is sometimes asked about living outside the temple for a devotee. So that was the big issue at that time. He then began his answer. Just as one does not have to be a member of the stock exchange to do business, he can do business without being a member. But if one is a member of the stock exchange, his doing business becomes easy because all of his associations are to do with business. Similarly, one can be a devotee and live outside the temple, but completing his devotional business is easier if he lives inside. What an impartial and straightforward and simple answer. But everyone was like, wait a minute, what does that mean? I mean, what do you really mean? Our minds, because we were so young and there was such a spirit. But Prabhupada's answer was so simple. It's easier. The closer you are with devotees, it's easier. Because the more you're with devotees, the less worldly association that you have to take on. But one can be a devotee wherever, it's not a black or white, an either or. You be a devotee wherever you want. There's an advantage if you're living closely or sharing your time with devotees. So my husband wrote underneath, and during those years, devotees often asked Prabhupada this inside-outside question. ISKCON's general view was clear and simple. Those living in the temple were devotees, and those living outside the temple were demons. This did not represent Prabhupada's idea, however. And so then there's another expert. But it was actually that simple. It was simple. And if you examine the different characteristics of different levels of devotees, you see that the beginning devotee always sees like that. He's asked to see. There's good and bad. Good people and bad people. And I often liken it in my own understanding to somebody who has a little child, a little child, and they come out the front and you say, don't cross the road. You know, don't touch this. No, that's bad. This is good. Because there's so little that you have to make it explicit. Is this or it's this? And so in that stage, if at that point they can argue, crossing roads bad. No, my mother crossed the road. No, it's just, it's to be understood in its context that this is a child. So similarly, in the beginning, one has to see it very clearly. These people are good and these people are bad, to discriminate from what one was doing before if one wants to make a shift of values. But one is not asked to stay at that point. One's asked to go on from that point, and then to see the good in everyone, and then to try and think how he can help everyone. and to try to see and to see Krishna, who's the Supreme Lord, then try to see the devotees and make friends with them, then try to see the people who have no knowledge of Krishna and be kind and give them something, and then also to try to see the people who are extremely bad and keep away from them. Avoid their company, because you're not yet mature enough, pure enough to be able to speak to them in such a way that you may not arouse more of something in them that is not good. And then, when one becomes actually mature in devotional service, then one sees everyone on the same level, that everybody is good. Everybody is like a part of God. So he has none of these boundaries. But these boundaries are prescribed for the development stage. So this was in 1975, and it was very interesting for me in 1994, before I came to Christchurch. I went to Melbourne, then to Perth, and then to Christchurch. And I came to the temple, and and Anuruddha Prabhu was in charge. And he said to me, when I came, he said, "Can you give class, Bhagavatam class?" And he said, "No woman has ever given Bhagavatam class before in the Melbourne temple. It's unheard of, because it's such a conservative temple. And it never, ever, ever happened." And he said, "So would you give class?" And when I sat down in the temple, inwardly I was like laughing, because I could still remember when the door was barred and you say, "Who is it?" You'd say, "Jagacharini." And they'd go, 1, 2, 3, 4. And you'd think, and then 10, 20 years later, it's all completely transformed. So this is why I say that the oldest devotees have a great responsibility to set a good example, to grow in their own devotional growth as they can, to their best capacity. Not something artificial, but to do the best that they can. Because of people coming up behind. And there may be sometimes some temporary turbulence of one sort or another. One time I was told that time, the element of time, turns friends into enemies and enemies into friends. But time has no influence over devotion. Only over the circumstances of this world, time is turning everything around. But one's actual devotion to Krishna is not under the influence of time. So we have to develop that. And as we do that, Prabhupada will become very pleased, and he will bless us all so that we can actually continue with our trafficking down the river of life to get to the ocean. And then also he will help us to take that instinctive journey back up the river so that we can arrive at our natural place beyond the covered universe. Now here's the last little one from Prabhupada. This is about occupation. "We have purposefully denoted dharma as occupation because the root meaning of the word dharma is that which sustains one's existence." This is what this word dharma means, a very important word. Sometimes you hear people say, "Oh, there is Hindu dharma, there is, I don't know, can't think of the words now, but there's like dharma to your mother and father, and dharma for this and dharma for that." This word is a very common word in India, and it has also now come oftentimes to the West in alternative settings. But Prabhupada is giving the definition: what sustains your existence is your dharma. So it's not occupation in that sense of I could have this occupation or that occupation, or but it's what, how you sustain your existence. So it's a little deeper than the word occupation in the way we would know it. He says a living being's sustenance of existence is, what sustains his existence is, to coordinate his activities with his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. To coordinate his activities with his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. That is one's dharma. What do you want to tell me that you think of from hearing that? Yes? Go.
Sorry. I'm just already thinking of how you know what your eternal relationship is with Krishna.
Different moods. The last one said that you have to have a sword of knowledge, right? So you have to hear. And as you hear, you develop a sense of what your relationship with Krishna is. But your relationship with Krishna is always one of service. It's based on serving. That's our nature. But it's a loving relationship. The moods of love are different, but the service is consistent in all. Any good point, good question. Any other? Yes? Did you have a hand or just a...
Okay.
Any more points? Let's hear from some of the ladies. They're very silent. What do you think? What comes to your mind by hearing from Prabhupada? Sachi?
I think that the ideal is to do something which helps you to be Krishna conscious. So, because we don't really need to do certain things. We don't need to work, you know, like asses or whatever.
Like
very asses. Hard. We can actually have a choice.
Mm.
It's not so bad, you know. Especially New Zealand is pretty.
Mm.
It's got a lot of choice, and it's a very easy country to live.
Mm.
So we're actually quite blessed that we have that opportunity to sustain us by doing something more pious or, you know, not so karma sort of involving, or something we can actually preach within,
something that you can either something that doesn't divert you, your energy, or something whereby you can do a positive action of giving people. These two are very favorable situations. Any other thoughts? Yes? That's a nice thought, because sometimes, you know, when people have been in difficult situations, they think that cooperation means either I win or you win. You meet people who sort of have that concept in their mind when they suggest cooperation, but cooperation in the absolute sense means win-win. Yeah. And and one reason why it means win-win is because you're part of Krishna, and so Prabhupada goes on here. He says, Krishna is the central pivot of living beings, and he is the all-attractive living entity or eternal form amongst all other living beings or eternal forms. Each and every living being, so this is answering your question about our relationship, each and every living being has his eternal form in the spiritual existence, and Krishna is the eternal attraction for all of them. Krishna is the complete whole, so he's the whole. And Krishna is the complete whole, and everything else is his part and parcel. This word part and parcel is interesting for those who are not familiar with Srila Prabhupada's concept here. He's saying that a part means you're part of the whole, and a parcel means that you're whole in yourself. And he's saying that transcendence consists of both, that everything is a part of Krishna and everything in itself is whole. So it's not either or. Both of these things are inconceivably together in the transcendental absolute truth. So he says the relationship is one of servant and the served. This is nice. This is what I liked. It is transcendental and is completely distinct from our experience in material existence. We haven't had this experience yet. So when we take something and think a servant, served, occupation, we draw from, and so like Sachi can tell us, and it's true, that New Zealand is a nice place to have an occupation. It's a little bit easier. And I can say, oh, in Melbourne it's so much competition, that's difficult, this is this. What we're doing is we're drawing on our experiences of life. But this relationship with the Supreme in loving service is not like it's beyond all of that. And as Haley's saying, it's a win-win. It's a wonderful thing. And this is what we're all striving as students, like as students in a school, we're striving to try to come closer to achievement of. The relationship of servant and the served, Prabhupada says, is the most congenial form of intimacy. The most congenial form of intimacy. So generally this word intimate is a word that people, they appreciate this word because it has certain connotations, but intimate means somebody who's going to be so close to you. They're going to be dear to you. You're going to be dear to them. It has a lot of attractive power. Someone says, we're going to become intimate friends as opposed to just social friends. In Hindi, yes, and in Sanskrit, there are different words for friend. Yes? And each one has slightly different meaning. Right? Give us some.
Surit.
Surit means su. Rit. Mitra. Bandhu. Dost. Yeah. So what do they mean? Which one is more intimate than the next one?
Surit is very intimate.
Is there one higher than Surit? One that has some Priya in it? What is higher than Surit? Anything? Priya Bandhu is one. Because Priya means to the heart. Very, very. Su means auspicious. And Rit means heart. It's a very. If you call somebody you as Surit, means my friend. But it doesn't like dose. Dosti, you call on the street, oh, anyone is your friend like that. You know, like you said, oh, my friend, how are you today? And da, 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 da. Or in Australia, they say, how you going, mate?
Yes.
And you say that to everyone. Everyone is your mate. But so it's not that's not intimate. That's just a term to make some sort of sense of, you know, friendship that's motivated in some way. Or it's jolly, but it's not close to the heart. So this word friend, we might say, this person is my friend, my good friend, my dear friend, my intimate friend. But in the Sanskrit language, they have different words for these different degrees of intimacy. Srila Prabhupada, I'm reading that somewhere, he went through the different words and what each one meant. What does it mean, Sufit?
This comes from the word
Hrudaya. Yes.
Intimate relationship with the heart.
And the Su?
Su is very auspicious, very wonderful.
So it's a wonderful, intimate, heart-to-heart friend. And here we're hearing that the relationship of servant and served is the most congenial form of intimacy. One can realize it as devotional service progresses. Everyone should engage himself in that transcendental loving service of the Lord, even in his present conditional state of material life, wherever we are. That means whoever we are, wherever we are, whatever we are, whatever we aren't, we should engage like this. That will gradually give one the clue. I like this. You know how when you—I don't know if you had this, but we had as children where you would have a treasure hunt, yeah, and you hide some clues somewhere in there, little messages or something,
mm-hmm.
And you go hunt. When you get it, you know you've got it. It's like a little message, and it says, you know, go 10 steps to the left and look behind the tree. And then look on the top branch, and then there's something hanging down, and you grab it, and then you go and look for the next clue. So clues are very valuable. Or the other way, of course, where a clue comes in, if there's been a ghastly murder, and everybody's wondering who has done it, and they find a clue. So clues are very good, because they're going to give you, you're going to resolve a mystery, or you're going to find something by these clues. So Prabhupada says that, if you engage in devotional service in your present condition, whatever it is, then this will give you gradually a clue to what? You'll never guess what Prabhupada said. It's not special, but his words are different than he uses normally. It will give you a clue to what? Ha, ah, now you have to answer me. Clue to? No, it's not. It's two English words, and one starts with A and the second one starts with L. It will give us a clue to one to the men. It is
something with love? No.
No, not love.
Associate.
No.
Inspire.
No?
Doing
well. This will gradually give one the clue to. No? Getting warm. It starts with A. Yes, that's getting a little closer.
Something what?
No, not quite. You're getting a little closer.
I said act, A-C-T.
No. You're right as far as you went. No. No. The first part is right.
Sounds like.
What's the first one?
ACT is right.
Act.
Yes? You said actual. Actual life.
Actual life.
Robert says, that will gradually give one the clue to actual life, what is actually life, and the last part I like, he says, and will please one to complete satisfaction. So this is what Krishna consciousness is about. It's a win-win situation. We may not be getting that as our result from our struggles and endeavors at this particular time, but that is because we have to gradually go on with the process, but that's what the attainment is. And so we may think, oh, I don't know if I'm going to ever get there, but you're going in that direction. So the further you get, you may, if you wanted to go somewhere in New Zealand, you wanted to go into, I don't know, where is it? Some town, somewhere from here.
Bluff.
You might want to go to Bluff. And then wherever you want to go, when you're going, if you know that to get there you have to go this way, and if you go that way, you're going further away. But if it's a long way from where you are, and you go in that direction, you may only get a certain distance on the first day of your travels. And you may say, oh, listen, let's set apart for the night and, you know, camp here for a little while and we'll go on tomorrow. But you're going in the right direction. But if you say, I want to go to such and such place, and you're going in that direction, then you're only making your journey more and more and more difficult. Because even if you haven't started, you haven't even started it, you're going way, way, way in the opposite direction. So someone may say, oh, yes, I think I can get from here to there in today, so let's go, we'll just go and do it. And someone else might say, whoa, that's a long drive, I don't know if I can do that. Then you have to say, then take 2 days, then take 3 days. But that's the direction, it's over there, it's north from here. So this is what Srila Prabhupada is saying, and it may be that the drive is strenuous, it may be that you've got all kinds of people in the car, you're giving you a headache as you're driving, but you still, if you want to get there, it's north. And if you get there, it's a very nice place. So he's saying here, it will give you the clue to actual life and please you to complete satisfaction. I'll read you one last one and then we will take some prasanna, if you'll be patient with me. He Prabhupada says, so love of God is already there within each one of us, because we are part and parcel of Him. But that love is now covered by lust due to material association. When a mirror is covered by dust, you cannot see your reflection in it. But after you polish, you will see your face very clearly. Similarly, the process of bhakti yoga polishes the mirror of your heart. And when it is nicely polished, you will see what you are and how you should work so that you will become perfectly happy. Everything will be revealed. And Prabhupada finished by saying, therefore, our request is that you take this Krishna consciousness movement very
seriously,
very seriously, and try to apply yourself in the service of Krishna. So in sitting here, feeling a bit embarrassed, having to sit up higher and talk, I have to say that if I want to tell you what Prabhupada wants, he wants that we take this Krishna consciousness movement very seriously. And we should try to follow his instruction. Do our duty in relationship to Krishna, set a good example for others, do the best that you can, try as hard as you can, help each other, and go on trying to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, and Srila Prabhupada will become very pleased with you all. As I said, I've been coming here now for 10 years, over 10 years, and so I have a deep sense of affection for the devotees here. And when I, and it's a place that I feel it's like a home base. And I came here sometimes in difficult times, and the devotees were very kind and took care of me when I had different circumstances spontaneously occurred. So I feel very indebted to the devotees in Christchurch, and I feel really happy to tell them that Prabhupada will take care of you all, and that he's very fond of you all, and just keep going. Like when I said to you last night, no matter what happens, just keep going. Because there I was in 1975, who is it? The door doesn't open. And then in 19 years later, giving the first class in the temple, where were all those people? They'd all gone. And here I am walking in. And how was I to know that this was going to be ahead? That you would get appreciation where you once had, there was very hostile feelings. So don't take these things very deeply, but try to do the best that you can. And Prabhupada used to say, it's like a bag, you put all the rocks inside, you shake the bag, and they rub against each other and rub against each other, and this is a primitive way of polishing the stones. So it's a very practical way. You rub against each other, it's not pleasant. First to understand and empathize with that, with anyone who would say it. But there's a reason for it. We rub off some of the rough edges. If we just stay in the bag and keep going, and you don't know what's ahead. So please take this Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada said, and as I have also the same struggle to do, very seriously, and Prabhupada will bless all of us. Thank you for your time and patience, and I look forward to seeing you all again very soon, and coming back to Christchurch, and maybe we can do something nice together again. So thank you. Nana's got a cat. Nana's got a cat. Yes, Nana?
She's
your cat is waiting.
Now we're sending a special flight back for the cat. It was Nana's idea to cancel it.
I believe that. Nana's made a lot of friends. Well, if